This is your World War III update. Today on the channel, we're doing a comprehensive, a deep dive into all things SHTF as it's unfolding in the many theaters of war around the world, how they all interrelate, and I have some exclusive information that is up to the minute that does seem to suggest that many countries are preparing for a major near-term crisis, possibly of the thermonuclear sort. Going to share my unique analysis of that information as well as my short, medium, and long-term predictions. I want to first start off by offering my condolences to families and businesses impacted by the Jasper National Park wildfires. If you're not familiar with Jasper National Park, it's one of our most iconic tourist destinations. It has a special place in my heart because I've climbed many mountains around the region. I've taken my kids there for years, and unfortunately, 30 to 50% of the town has been consumed by a fast-moving conflagration, and it only appears like it's going to get worse because the fire season right now is really kicking into high gear. All the more reason to have an evacuation plan, have a bug-out plan, have a fire suppression plan. This is all too important for preppers who tend to retreat to wooded areas. Unfortunately, that's not without its share of risks. Fires is, of course, chief among them. Now, let's move things over to the Russian front. I should first say, at the time of making this video, I've just been informed that Romania has shot down a Russian drone inside their territory. This has been happening a lot in the last couple days as the Russians have been firing missiles in that direction along the river, trying to apparently target some port infrastructure that is built along the, I think, I don't have my map in front of me today, but I think it might be the Danube River, where Romania and Ukraine meet. So clearly they're doing that because the Romanians are bringing Ukrainian weaponry in through that region. And surprisingly, NATO hasn't said anything about this, despite that this is now common knowledge in the OSINT circles. And in fact, a lot of these drones have been falling into Romanian territory in recent days, even being shot down by the Romanian Air Force. So this is a serious situation. Any speculations right now that the Ukrainians are getting ready to capitulate to Russian demands, I think, is just smoke and mirrors. Because when you look at what is happening in numerous countries surrounding the region, all you're seeing is escalatory data points. Now, get a load of this. Russia is currently preparing for war. You tell me why Russia would be doing something like this right now, okay? With all this talk about how there's going to be some rapprochement with the Ukrainians and the Russians, tell me why they're getting ready to do this, okay? The Russian Ministry of Defense has ordered a large deployment of military hospitals, clinics, and trauma centers to certain cities across the country, including the capital, Moscow, which will operate directly under the Russian Defense Ministry. The only reason why you would do this is if you expected that the war was about to spill over into your territory, either conventionally or unconventionally. Now, we know that the Ukrainians are now suggesting that they are developing long-range weapon technology. What has actually likely happened is that NATO has helped them develop some sort of technology, and then they can say it's their own, when really the whole thing has been funded by NATO, but it's a way to absolve NATO of responsibility so not to trigger Article 5, as we can see NATO's reluctance to do so with the attacks of drones into Romanian territory. If NATO was so quick to want to trigger Article 5 for drones falling in Romania, they could have done it already. So clearly they want to avoid this. Now they're going to empower Ukrainians with the technology to develop long-range missiles that are going to complement the F-16s, and they're going to start firing these deep into Russian territory, namely on Russian cities. This is major because, of course, Russia is, I don't think, going to play the game of distinguishing between a NATO missile and a Ukraine missile when Ukraine is getting the ISR, the funding, and the material to make these weapon systems, as well as probably a lot of the brain power. So Russia right now is building these military hospitals and clinics around Moscow. That just makes no sense whatsoever unless they're preparing for a major escalation in this conflict. As I reported a couple weeks ago, Latvia has begun installing anti-tank barriers on the border with Russia. In addition to that, Lithuania is planning mass evacuation drills. Okay, get a load of this. Lithuania is developing a contingency plan in the event of a war, which would involve a mass evacuation of its citizens. To where? I don't know. What is Lithuania? A country of a few million people? How are you going to evacuate a few million people? Like, are they going to be evacuated across the Baltic? Are they going to be evacuated into Poland? Like, what is that going to look like? This is going to involve a mass evacuation of its citizens, according to the Interior Minister, and they're going to be having this drill in the fall. Again, another escalatory move. All of these rumors that Ukraine is getting ready to negotiate. You must remember that Russia's demands are ironclad. The Russians want all sanctions lifted, which is never going to happen. They want the withdrawal of Ukrainian troops from annexed territories, which would mean that the Russians would acquire even more territory. Because remember, the Russians only possess, what is it, like 60%, maybe 70% of the portion of the territory that they've annexed. They still haven't taken the city of Zaporozhye or Kherson, for instance. They want demilitarization and, of course, quote-unquote, denazification of Ukraine. These are all conditions for negotiations, conditions that Ukraine is not going to agree to. And, of course, the Kremlin doesn't believe that Zelensky has any legitimacy as the leader because, of course, there was supposed to be an election and there wasn't one, as predicted by the oracle Zhirinovsky many years ago. So according to Dmitry Peskov, this is going to be a major barrier. So the only way we could even see the beginning of some sort of rapprochement is if Zelensky is taken out of office. And when Biden goes out, I would not be surprised if we don't see that. The question is, who are they going to put in his place? According to Nikolai Petrushev, lying is a years-long basic principle of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and its leaders, and the alliance cannot be trusted. So even if there was some sort of deal struck, the Russians would always be second-guessing that deal, and everybody would always be on a razor's edge of a distrust, thinking that the other side was simply trying to buy time to build up their military manpower. Now, here's an interesting story. Russian military men crack down on new bill that bans smartphones in the special operations zone. Now, you think that this would have been done a long time ago because the Ukrainians have been utilizing Russians who are on their smartphones to target them with drones ever since the beginning of the conflict. But now there is officially going to be a ban. As per July 24th, soldiers will be subject to disciplinary arrest for using gadgets while on duty. Is this an attempt? And this is just my analysis. Is this an attempt to compartmentalize and basically cut off soldiers from information that is happening around the world, to compartmentalize the front in such case there is a major escalation in hostilities towards the Russian end? I mean, it reminds me of when there was the breakdown with Prigozhin, and how the front lines, people were wondering, you know, is there going to be a home to go to after this? Is there going to be a civil war? That, of course, can compromise fighting on the front. So are they trying to compartmentalize soldiers, cut them off from the internet? And I do believe that there's a lot to do with this. Or is it just strictly for their safety? If it was just for their safety, they probably would have done this years ago. They would have imposed this. If you forget the whole fiasco of Russian soldiers going on Tinder trying to get dates with Ukrainian girls and, of course, getting targeted by drones, right? So they would have done this a long time ago. So I think that there's something more to this. And it also seems to relate to the story that 70%, that's the number that YouTube is going to be throttled in Russia in the next few months. Russia is going to start throttling YouTube. So now, you're not going to be able to watch YouTube at a reasonable speed. Nobody's going to want to use it because it's already very slow. and they're going to start degrading their YouTube service. They are saying that it's due to infrastructure not being maintained ever since the sanctions were imposed. There's no Google or YouTube representatives there, technicians there in order to manage these facilities. And so they have to go all the way to the United States with the connection. There's no, I can't remember what they're called, but they're like temporary internet caches to make the process of watching a YouTube video faster. They don't have that anymore. But I think it's more ado with the censorship that has taken place. Of course, they've banned channels like RT and the like. And so Russia has finally said, okay, enough is enough. We're going to ban YouTube. So we're starting to see the Iron Curtain descend. Now, why would all this be happening in and around the time in the run-up to the election while the Russians are currently building field hospitals in their major cities? Something about that just doesn't sit well with me. That seems to suggest that something really big is on the horizon. Now, in terms of, we're just going to kind of go around the world here because I got all my notes. They're kind of scattered brain today. We have a NORAD bomber intercept that you probably heard of. This was the first time that China ever approached the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone with their bombers, with two Russian Tu-95 bombers, as well as PRC H-6 military aircraft. This is the first time there was ever a joint incursion into this airspace by the Russians and the Chinese. This comes only days after the numerous intercepts of bombers in Romania, in the Baltics, as well as Alaska with just Russian bombers themselves. So something big is definitely brewing. You have a Biden today committing, or what appeared to be Joe Biden, I should say, a very doped up ASMR inducing Joe Biden said that the next 6 months, his commitment is to ending Putin, essentially, is to finishing off the job with the Russians. So that does not bode well for international security. I'm just going to clear up our discussion here of the Russian front. Then we're going to bring things over to Netanyahu and the Middle East. We had in the Black Sea, Russian Su-27 intercept a British RC-135W rivet joint, which was accompanied by two Eurofighter Typhoons. So it appears as though as the United States has moved its drones out of the Black Sea after that one, which we can pretty much ostensibly say now was probably shot down, because of course, since that time, we don't see them anymore. The only thing we see are manned flights. So now you have the Russians who are forced to engage these manned flights directly, which increases the risk that should they shoot one of these down, that Article 5 is going to be triggered. NATO is also currently building up its forces inside the Black Sea. Right now, in the Black Sea, the fervently anti-Russian bloc, this is according to Petrushev, actually demonstrated its ambitious plans to build up its military presence in the region and intensify confrontation. So right now, NATO is building up its warships and naval presence in the Black Sea as Russia is continuously pushed back. I just got word that the Russians are putting in some very heavy air defense and fortifications in and around the Kerch Bridge region. I would presume that they're expecting a major attack very soon. According to General Sirsky, the top commander in the Ukrainian military, Ukraine is not going to use F-16s on the front line. Fighter jets will be used to strengthen air defense, but F-16s will destroy Russian cruise missiles and strike ground targets, but will remain 40 kilometers from the front line due to the risk of being shot down. And as I've always said, the reason why they're going to do this is because it's going to be NATO pilots in the cockpits, and were they to get shot down over Russian territory or that close to the front, of course, they could potentially be either captured if they survive the shoot down, or their bodies could be captured. It might be discovered that they weren't Ukrainian soldiers, if you can even determine that, I don't know. But of course, this is what I've long since suspected, part of the reason why they're going to hang back. We also have Russia claiming to have killed 50 foreign instructors in an Iskander missile strike. That is a major blow to the Ukrainian forces. As I said, Ukraine is currently developing long-range missiles. I've talked about the drones that have hit inside Romania. The Polish foreign minister, Sikorsky, has urged EU states to allow Kiev to launch Western lead strikes on Russian territory. Okay, so the Polish foreign ministry chief said the move would help prevent Russian attacks by destroying planes and airports. So Poland is wanting Ukraine to go all in and start using NATO weapons to target deep inside Moscow. Now, typically, when historically, when the Russians have started to make these defensive moves near their major cities, you start to see a ramping up in hostilities in within about 3 to 6 months' time. So I suspect that what they're getting ready for and all of this rhetoric about allowing Kiev to launch Western-led strikes on what Russian territory is to get the ground primed for long-range missiles, as well as utilizing these F-16s to target deep inside Russia. Okay, so that's a very significant escalation. Now, in terms of what's happening on the Netanyahu front, that was just a circus the other day in Congress. He's basically rallying the United States for another major war. A lot of Republicans are just, you know, sucking at the teat. They got their noses so deep up this guy's ass, and I'm just going to say it because it's the truth. They want to bring you all into another war, and they're going to use this political divisiveness in order to do it. Okay, they're going to try to make the association of anybody who's anti-war with Antifa or something stupid like that. So what's going to happen now is they're proposing the creation of a new military bloc that is modeled after NATO, which is going to be called the Abraham Alliance. And there are rumors, according to Israel Channel 14, that Netanyahu now has the support he needs to wage war in Lebanon. And indeed, if Trump is elected, there will be nobody that stands in his way. And upon return, he will go to Kira in Tel Aviv to start the conflict. The IDF states that it's ready for the invasion. And the Air Force commander says that Israel is prepared for a total war with Hezbollah. In fact, they're talking about some blitzkrieg Air Force maneuver, which is just going to completely decimate Lebanon in the first day of the conflict, or at least that's what they are hoping for. Okay. Now, in terms of what is happening, oh yeah, during that time, I should add, Putin was meeting with Assad. So we can see that the dividing lines between the Russians and the Israelis are becoming more deeply entrenched, as Putin is having a very cordial meeting with President Assad of Syria, while Netanyahu is currently, I believe he's meeting with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. He just met with Joe Biden. So I think all these rumors of, again, the Democrats being anti-Israel, you know, they're just doing that for PR. Netanyahu has two choices. He can support, and when I say he, I mean AIPAC, can support the Republicans who are going to have offer their overt support, but of course get a lot of resistance from the general public, or they can go with a Democratic approach, which is we're going to still give you all the weapons you need, but we're going to pretend as though we're against you because we know our constituents don't like you that much. And that's that. What else do we have to talk about here? I just want to make sure we've hit on all the boxes today. There's just so much stuff going on. Gold crashed, as did the stock market in the past couple days, but gold did not crash as much as the stock market did. And all this is consolidation. You know, the more consolidation you get like this, and a lot of people are just selling to cover their losses, and a lot of the shorts are selling to cover their losses. So, you know, I don't really look at the price of gold so much in terms of getting worried about investment, because a gold is always going to buy you what it has always bought you. The price of gold is never, the value of gold, I should say, never really fundamentally changes. It's just a barometer for social chaos. And it's in many ways foreshadows what's going to happen in terms of geopolitical unrest. Oil is also doing some very strange things. Now it's going up again. I really don't know what to make of it. I think right now a lot of it has to do with the interplay between Netanyahu's visit and who's going to be assuming office. Because, of course, depending on who assumes office, that's going to dictate what the foreign policy will be, not to a large extent, but to a significant extent enough that it's going to affect the global supply chain, especially oil. If we go to war with Iran, the price of oil presumably is going to skyrocket because, of course, they're going to unleash all of their proxies, which, of course, will, even if a country is not in Iran, a country, even if a oil and gas infrastructure is not in Iran or a country directly at war, one of the asymmetrical tactics is to target countries' infrastructure who are in some way colluding with the Israelis and the Americans. So that, of course, means Saudi Arabia. And the Yemenis have made that abundantly clear that if the Saudis allow and facilitate Israel to conduct strikes against their territory, that they will start targeting Saudi Aramco and the other large oil and gas facilities and infrastructures within the region. And those are pretty easy targets, okay? They're not like military targets that are heavily defended against. Now, we also should touch upon what is happening in Taiwan. In Taiwan right now, and I look forward to doing a big screen breakdown of all of this stuff. Right now, I'm a little bit indisposed with other things. But Taiwan is stationing a lot of weapons in temples, churches, and other religious places. And there's images of this. In the future, in the case a war breaks out, is it possible that they're doing this in order to act as human shields, civilian shields? Is Taiwan really, if they're to the point where they're putting these weapon systems in these religious places and places surrounding civilian infrastructure, are they doing this because a war is imminent? Right now, China, of course, who's partaken in the recent bombing drill sortie around Alaska, is currently stockpiling like crazy. China is rapidly amassing large reserves of commodities such as fuel, manufacturing metals, and precious metals despite high market prices for its own economic downturn. We've been talking about this for a while, but now it's becoming quite common knowledge and it's starting to spook a lot of investors. Global concerns. Western observers, including in the US, are concerned that this behavior might indicate preparations for a military conflict. You think? Strategic stockpiling is what China is currently doing. They have instructed state-owned companies to significantly increase reserves of oil and grains, aiming to bolster its stockpile to unprecedented levels. The Chinese government closely guards information related to its stockpile levels, making it difficult for outside analysts to determine the exact scale of these stockpiles. So a lot of secrecy surrounding this. And if we know anything about the Chinese, we know that if they do something, they usually do it big. So what we're being told about their stockpiles are actually probably just a small, you know, fraction of what they actually have. Some analysts speculate that the stockpiling is in preparation for an invasion of Taiwan by 2027. I think it depends who enters into office. In fact, they could be doing it at any time now. Right now, Taiwan just experienced a major typhoon, which if you see the actual weather radar footage, this thing, if you thought Hurricane Katrina was suspicious in terms of how the hurricane moved, this thing approached land, then it went south, then it went north again, and then it hit land. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen on weather radar. You should definitely go and check it out. We'll probably show you that on here if you don't get a chance to see that at a later date, but definitely something else. So right now is not an opportune time to go over the Taiwan Strait. The weather isn't right, but there is seasonal windows for this, and I would not be surprised if they capitalize on the next one of those windows that would precede the U.S. election. Others suggest that China is preparing for potential economic isolation from Western suppliers, possibly in anticipation of tougher export restrictions, especially with potential political changes in the U.S. Despite past efforts to move away from resource-intensive industries, China is importing commodities at a record state. Stockpiling could be a means to gain market control or create leverage over other competitors. There are views that China might be using its actions to fuel international fears of a potential conflict. The stockpiling aligns with materials necessary for staging a long-term military conflict, especially with Taiwan. While currently beneficial to some industries due to increased sales, there are concerns about long-term negative effects on growth, and China has been reducing its holdings of U.S. government debt and increasing its gold reserves, possibly as a hedge against potential future sanctions similar to those imposed on Russia. So some interesting developments on every theater of war. I'm going to leave you with one thought. Gerald Ford, I believe it was in 1989, predicted almost to a T how the first female president would be elected. And you got to go and watch this video. Again, when we get in studio, I'm going to show you the video. He basically predicts that the only way that you're going to see a female president is if first you get a female vice president. And he says this so eloquently and so short and succinctly when asked by, it appeared to be some kind of student asking him, you know, will we ever see a female president? He said that first we're going to have a female vice president. And then the president will have to die in office. Okay? And that's how you're going to see your first female president. And he said, if you see one, then you're very likely going to see several others. So a very prescient quote. And I tell you, man, you know, sometimes I guess it really does make sense, right? Because you wouldn't just jump into it all at once. It would be something that people would have to gradually get used to. And it appears as though that's what we're seeing right now. I'd encourage you to check out our recent video we did with Kai the Radiation Guy, a resident nuclear physicist who talks all about how you can survive a nuclear war even if you don't have a bunker. It is survivable. We're going to be discussing the many myths surrounding full-blown nuclear conflict that I think are unfortunately being perpetuated in the mainstream more and more this day and age. Ones that I've succumbed to in the past, but I've come to realize are largely fictitious. So go and check out that video. It's our video that we released before this one. Highly informative. I suggest you just download it. And it's something that if you watch it, it will hopefully put your mind at ease that the threat of radiation is something you can mitigate relatively easy. In fact, you don't need a whole lot to mitigate it. Okay. This is something that is very survivable. It's not something that's going to be permanent. There's going to be some permanent aspects to it, but the more you know, the less you need to fear. There is a certain degree of personal protective equipment that will be useful, but again, it is not absolutely necessary either. So go and check that video out. I'll keep you guys posted if I hear anything else. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out.